Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick. And Robert, I've got a question for you about childhood divination practices.
Oh, go for it.
Did you ever do this thing when you were a kid that I definitely did, where you were worried about some question, you wanted an answer like, am I going to get in trouble because I said butthead on the playground? And what you do is you go to some book, probably the Bible, or any book, but especially the Bible, and you just open to a random page and you close your eyes and you put your finger on a verse and then you look down and it says, now Jehoram the son of Ahab began to reign over Israel and Samaria the 18th year of Jehoshaphat king of Judah and reigned 12 years.
That's the problem about randomly generated Bible quotations, is that you might get something really juicy and thoughtful and helpful. You might get something that's just an incident of hideous violence from the ancient past, or some sort of psychedelic prophecy.
You're very likely to get a list of progeny or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't think I ever did this with the intent of getting some sort of meaning or guidance from the book, but I certainly did it out of boredom at times. Mm-hmm. Because growing up in church, you're not everything going on up there is going to be really interesting to a young person. So you only have so many things you can turn to. You can poke around in the hymnal, you can poke around in the Bible, or you can doodle a little bit on the program. But you can only get away with so much of that.
Right.
So you turn to the Bible, and there is a lot of interesting stuff in there. A lot of boring stuff in there, just depending on where your fingertip happens to land.
Well, yeah, just after that verse I mentioned, I mentioned a verse from 2 Kings because it seems like very often when you split the Bible in half, you go somewhere like in the later middle Old Testament with mm-hmm. a lot of those kinds of verses that are not super helpful. But right after that, you'd get, and he wrought evil in the sight of the Lord, but not like his father and like his mother, for he put away the image of Baal that his father had made. Somehow that seems a little more relevant to saying butthead on the playground. Maybe yeah. Like the Baal is the butthead. You've done something worthy of guilt.
Yeah, you simply miscast your initial divination there, you know, like you just needed to be one degree to the left or the right.
Well, it highlights the fact that some divination actually does feel more relevant than other divination, even though we would probably say that no divination actually has access to future or special knowledge, right?
Yeah, like one example that comes to mind that lines up with this is something I used to do as an adult is I would just randomly pull up a date on the writer's almanac and see what the poem for that day happened to be. This was a radio program about literary history, and each day that they aired it, it would have a certain poem by a poet, living or dead. It varied, and since each poem is generally going to speak to the human condition in some way, shape, or form, there's almost always going to be something you can gain from it, something you can compare to your own experience, and at times that might feel rather poignant and perfect and just cosmically aligned.
And because we have such powers of interpretation, we can very easily do that. I mean, I feel like if I'd been trying really hard, I wouldn't need like a good verse like the one about Baal and wreaking wickedness. And I wouldn't even need a good poem. I could probably make some kind of sense out of that weird lineage passage, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you could make sense out of pretty much any poem they throw at you, right?
Yeah, yeah. If you try hard enough, if you sort of twist the meaning enough, you can find something in just about any poem to apply to you. And certainly we see plenty of examples of pastors and other clerical individuals out there who are following, say, a liturgical calendar, and they have a certain passage that they are given for a given Sunday that they have to transform into a message. And a skilled preacher will be able to do that.
But in a divinatory context, mm-hmm. I wonder, why are we so good at this and why do we keep doing it? Why are we so intolerant of uncertainty that throughout history we always keep coming back to these methods of seeking secret information from outside ourselves?
Yeah, it's the thing that we fear the most in life, and yet we summon it in trying to figure out how we're going to tackle uncertainty.
Yeah. And also, like, why do we keep doing it? On the assumption, like, you and I know, are not going to be advocating the magic powers of any divination method in this mm-hmm. episode. So on the assumption that the information provided through divination is no better than chance at being correct, why do we keep doing it? Is there something actually adaptive or powerful or useful about this process, even though it doesn't actually have magic access to the future?
Well, it simply makes choices easier at times. I think we've all been in a situation where maybe it's not as simple as like who's going to serve first in a game of tennis, but it becomes too much of an effort to decide who's going to pick up the tab at a bar, right? It becomes too much of an argument. There are too many social considerations to take into place. It's much easier just to make it random,
yeah.
Just a complete random act. Flip a coin, paper, rock, scissors, whatever, and just come up with an answer, and then you don't have to think about it anymore. You got it. The cognitive load has just been dumped.
I think that is a great answer, like the laziness perspective. Mm-hmm. We know Mother Nature is quite lazy, and anything we can do to reduce cognitive loads and take the effort out of the process, that can be helpful.
Yeah, it's at the end of the day, you have decision fatigue from all the other decisions you've made, and you just can't decide if it's going to be macaroni or crab cakes for dinner. Let randomness, let a flip of a coin decide it for me.
And yet there are some contradictions in there, aren't there? Because mm-hmm. that seems to make sense for trivial decisions where you don't want to be bothered by stuff. But people use divination methods and, you know, casting of lots and all that kind of stuff and opening the Bible to a random verse to make the most important decisions in their lives.
Oh, yeah.
That's almost when you most find yourself seeking this, when you're really desperate, when you really need to know something, when you really don't know what to do about something important. Then people seek the wisdom of the gods. That's an interesting contradiction, and I want to come back to that later. A second thing that I think is interesting, given the idea that we're not going to be advocating that any books have magic powers or have the power to predict the future, is that nevertheless, some divination methods seem better, more powerful, and more profound than others, even though none of them are actually magic. For example, your average newspaper horoscope it's kind of hilarious to most of us, right?
Like right.
If you've done some research on the Forer effect and making mm-hmm. vague statements that seem like they apply specifically to you, but in fact they apply to almost everybody, you can see these just the newspaper horoscopes just riddled with them.
Right. Or another example would be, and this is an even worse example because there's even less methodology behind it, but the fortune cookie,
which
we've many of us have grown up obtaining at Chinese restaurants, is, of mm-hmm. course, not even a legitimate Chinese cultural artifact.
Right. Sometimes delightful, nevertheless.
It can be delightful. It can be fun. I mean, everybody loves a fortune cookie. It's a cookie, and it has this sheet of paper in it that you can talk about with your friends or make a joke about. But it's pretty lightweight and inauthentic when it comes to considering Chinese divination.
Well, to get into Chinese divination, I want to say that while we're highlighting divination methods that even while we fully acknowledge they're not magic and they are really just artifacts of culture that play on our psychological vulnerabilities, some feel like they get at something deeper. And I think for me, the prime example of this would be the Chinese classic, the I Ching, the guided divination book, also known as the Book of Changes. And that's what we're going to be talking about today.
Now, I do want to drive home that if you ever looked up the I Ching and started to read about it and then you get intimidated by this big block of symbols, well, trust us because we're going to guide you through the I Ching here, and we're not going to get too far into the weeds on the particulars of Chinese divination and sorcery.
Right. We wanted to look more at like the idea of the I Ching, how it works in its most basic sense, how it fits into the psychology of the human practice of divination, and why so many thinkers from ancient Chinese philosophers to Carl Jung have believed it to contain such profundity, despite the fact that it doesn't actually predict the future. It's not magic. It doesn't predict the future, but it does do something interesting. And what does it do?
Well, as the name implies, it speaks to change in our lives and in the universe, mm-hmm. as the title, The Book of Changes, implies. There's a wonderful quote I want to read from Alan Watts, who spoke and wrote at length about the I Ching. He said, "It's almost a mapping of the thinking processes of man."
Yeah, he has a lot of interesting thoughts about it, especially in the context of thinking about the yin and yang imagery in Chinese culture. But Watts also compares the functioning of the I Ching to the logic gates, to the, you know, binary logic in technology.
Yeah, totally. I mean, in essence, the Book of Changes is just an ancient book of Chinese divination.
Right. You seek the answer to a question and you have a process mm-hmm. and the book will help give you some kind of answer.
Right. But it's also much more than that. And I think it lacks a true parallel in the West in terms of its influence. So one could perhaps make a case for the Bible.
But the Bible is not explicitly intended as a book of divination, right?
Right. But I'm speaking beyond like mere divination, just in terms of how important the work is.
Right.
It's like a root text for a civilization.
Yeah.
It's hard. I mean, you could make a case for the Bible, but I feel like that's not really a direct one-to-one between the I Ching and whatever version of the Bible one is presenting.
Yeah, I'd agree.
So this is a classical text that was recorded in the 9th century BCE, and it contains verses that incorporate divination terms and images. It was used by diviners to read sticks or stalks of yarrow plant that were cast 6 at a time so that they fell in the shape of a hexagram. And the practice would have involved lore, art, and mathematics mm-hmm. in interpreting it. So it's considered one of the great five Chinese classical texts, and it serves as a root text for both Taoism and Confucianism. And beyond that, it also influenced Chinese science and statecraft. In other words, it's a fundamental work of Chinese culture. And in fact, it alone, among all the Confucian classics, escaped the book burnings of Qin Shi Huang, who we recently discussed at length in an episode.
Do you know why it survived? Is there a reasoning behind that, or is that just an accident?
My understanding is that there may be more to it, but it was just such a fundamental text.
Yeah.
It was a root text. You could not just rip it out of the culture, no matter how many other things you were ripping apart.
So like even if you're a person who's devoted to erasing history and establishing a new world, there are some books that maybe seem so pivotal and so important to you as a tool that you can't get rid of them.
Right. Yeah. It's like you can rip down the house, but this is the foundation.
Yeah.
So German sinologist Richard Wilhelm, who lived 1873 through 1930, he was a key individual in the history of Western scholarship on the I Ching, as was his son as mm-hmm. well. He wrote that there were pros and cons to the book's importance. On one hand, quote, it forced Chinese philosophical thinking more and more into a rigid formalization. Yet he also points out that, quote, apart from this mechanistic number of mysticism, a living stream of deep human wisdom was constantly flowing through the channel of this book into everyday life, giving to China's great civilization the ripeness of wisdom distilled through the ages.
Well, being a book and not just being, say, a, you know, a method of casting animal bones or something mm-hmm. like that, but having written content, we do have to acknowledge that it does contain inherent directionalness, right? Because it has written words, there are things that this book says and things that this book does not say. And that's different from a totally freeform type of divination that could say anything at any time, right?
Right, the sort of magic eight ball kind of scenario, right?
Well, no, I mean, an eight ball has a number of messages too. Mm-hmm. Like the eight ball has written content.
Yeah,
I guess it's less literary. but no, I mean, I'm thinking like as opposed to just sitting somewhere and saying like, all right, what are the gods telling me that could go in any direction? When you've got a book to guide you, the book says some things in it, and it doesn't say other things.
Oh, right, like for instance,
the book constrains you.
Right, so it would be different than say setting in Central Park in New York City and saying, all right, God, give me a sign. And then you look around until you notice something that seems like it might be a message from the divine.
Yeah.
And it could be anything. It could be a peculiar looking dog. A child looks at you with a weird eye, or there's a, you know, a large child eating corn on the cob. Well, you know, the portent could be anything.
But I like where your brain went with that. But I'm seeing the Robert Lamb black box here.
That was a John Hodgman reference for our Hodgman fans.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was one of the portents that he lays out.
Wait, one, the weird eye or the corn on the cob?
The corn on the cob,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe that was one of the signs of Ragnarok approaching.
Now, is there a hexagram in the I Ching of the child with the weird eye?
Ooh, I don't know. There might be.
Child with weird eye turning. All right, well, we should actually explain a little bit more of the specifics of how the book works. So if you are an ancient Chinese philosopher and you want to know something about the future, or you want the answer to a question in your life, how would you use the book?
All right. So at this point, we really just need to sort of break down the process
yeah.
of the I Ching, how it works. So what's the most basic question you could ask of a god or the universe or what have you? Or say a coin. You could ask the same question. You could ask it a yes or a no question.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Basic binary situation here. And you can ask this of virtually anything. You could stare at the park and say, all right, give me a sign, God, if the answer to my question is a yes. And then you wait till you see the child with the corn.
In a way, it's the most efficient sort of information-dense way of consulting anything
yeah.
is to ask a yes or no question, right?
Yeah. And at the heart, the Book of Changes comes down to this yes-no binary. So the cast sticks form lines, and a single unbroken line is a yes, while a broken line is a no. But pretty early on, the ancient diviners added additional details to these divined answers, a second line. So now you could have such answers as essentially yes, yes, no, no, yes, no, no, yes. And then a third line produces the eight trigrams. That's the that's the symbol. When you look at those charts of all these weird lines and you're intimidated by the I Ching, that's what you're looking at, the trigrams.
Okay.
And also if you've ever seen an image of the yin yang symbol mm-hmm. and it's surrounded by these different line based symbols, then those are the trigrams.
Okay.
You'll see that on just the logo for say a martial arts studio in any given small town in America, but that also underlines just how widespread these are in Chinese culture and things that are inspired by Chinese culture.
Would you say it's so widespread that it makes it even into lots of imagery where the people employing it don't even know what it's from?
Oh, without doubt. Yeah. So as Wilhelm points out, quote, these eight trigrams were conceived as images of all that happens in heaven and earth. At the same time, they were held to be in a state of continual transition, one changing into another, just as transition from one phenomenon to another is continually taking place in the physical world. And that's the central idea of the Book of Change, a universe defined by changing transitional states.
Yeah, I would say that it seems that the primary ideas within the Book of Changes are duality and binaries, mm-hmm. and then constant flux between them, right?
Right.
There are two ways things can be, and you're always going back and forth between those two ways.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. So again, we have these eight trigrams at this point, and then each one takes on additional meanings. So one is the father, the other the mother, then first son, second son, third son, and then the three daughters. One is heaven, one is earth, one is thunder, water, mountain, wind, wood, fire, lake. Other attributes such as strength or resting or penetration or joyfulness.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take these trigrams and then you use them in combination with each other, producing a total of 64 signs, six lines each. Change one line in one of these and you change the situation they represent, such as earth or thunder. Mm-hmm. So we're left with a series of situations expressed as line-based symbols, and the movement of these lines change the situation. And in response to each situation, there's a right and a wrong course of action. And this is where the Book of Changes transforms from a mere book of divination to a book of wisdom. What should I do about the situation just revealed to me?
Now, that's interesting. So the book, this is another way in which the content of the book actually matters. It's not just a process for giving you random answers to yes or no questions. It also tells you something about the situation and recommends behavior.
Yeah, it's pretty big. It's not merely revealed fate. You have a role to play. And the germinal phase in all of this is key. This is when things are most susceptible to change, which matches up with our experience of reality, you know? And out of this, we get the idea of the Tao, the course of things, the great stirring represented in the yin-yang symbol. And it was used by sorcerers, diviners, Confucius, Taoists, statesmen, scientists, and more, with writings popping up and vanishing over the ages devoted to the various interpretations. And new writings, some of which we'll discuss here, continue to pop up as new individuals and new cultures discover the Book of Changes. All right, on that note, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we will bust out an example of I Ching consultation before discussing it in greater depth. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
All right, we're back.
All right, so today we've been talking about the I Ching, this ancient Chinese method of divination, the Book of Changes, and some interesting psychological characteristics of it, how it works. But we should show you what it feels like to consult the I Ching and get some results. So one example I came up with last night, for a while I've been working on a writing project, and I just asked the I Ching last night whether I would get any good writing done this coming weekend. Because you never know, is stuff going to come up that's going to draw you away, distract you, or am I going to be productive? So I did a virtual version that allows you to use virtual coin flips to generate the hexagram number. So I didn't actually have to flip coins or throw sticks.
Yeah, there are a number of different websites that allow you to do this. And some even give you the choice where you can physically flip your own coins and record it on the website.
Yeah.
Which if you're like me and you play role-playing games, you prefer actual dice. As opposed to just pure digital. Like, it seems wrong to trust the computer world completely. I want my physical uncertainty to take place on the table.
Well, there's definitely a way in which if you actually believe there's something magic about the process, then people very often default to wanting physical tokens for magical kind of significance. It's harder to feel like something magic is happening inside the computer just generating random numbers.
Right.
But either way, let's say I don't believe anything magic is going on. I use the computer and it generates hexagram 18, repairing decay. So that bodes well for my writing project. But I see repairing decay. Interesting note, the Chinese word here is gu, which is a type of venom-based poison made from like combining, I think, scorpions and different insects or worms.
Yeah, yeah. Anyone who listened to the episode I did with Christian about poisons a while back will recognize this term. We discussed it at length, this idea that this mix of magic and actual pharmacology, and it's sometimes just like pure superstition attached to various peoples, that they have a magical power of poison or goo.
Now, but it's also linked to this idea of decay, and that's where repairing decay comes in.
Yeah.
So here's an example of the kind of thing that the Book of Changes might say to you if you get hexagram 18, or this is what it will say to you in this English translation. Work on what has been spoiled has supreme success. It furthers one to cross the great water. Before the starting point, 3 days. After the starting point, 3 days. And then also, the wind blows low on the mountain, the image of decay. Thus the superior man stirs up the people and strengthens their spirit.
I like that. There's a little something in there for everybody. But I could see where it definitely can apply to a writing project, because the thing that I instantly think of is, well, it sounds like you've got editing work this weekend.
Yeah.
That sounds like you're going to do some revisions on your existing work, and maybe there's going to be less striking out into bold new territory.
I think this example shows some of the qualities that I was talking about with the I Ching at the beginning, in that even though I believe that there's nothing magic about it, it's somehow useful. It's doing something that other divination practices don't really do. And maybe part of that is just spurring lines of thought going off in all different directions that allow one to consider possibilities of action.
All right, well, let's do another one, just totally off the top of my head.
Maybe a more important question this
time. Will the werewolves rise up tonight to consume us?
Okay, let's consult. This is going to be the electronic version of the I Ching. And so I'm going to virtually throw the coins, right?
Okay. It's three coins for each line, I believe.
It's true, yeah. So you have to throw three coins six times. Ah, and the arrangement we've gotten sends us to hexagram 53. Qin, development or gradual progress. Development, the maiden is given in marriage. Good fortune. Perseverance furthers. On the mountain, a tree, the image of development. Thus the superior man abides in dignity and virtue in order to improve the mores.
Ah, so if we were playing a game of werewolf, this would there's a lot we could gather from this. It seems to imply a certain patience and dignity in dealing with the villagers, and the idea that we're maybe going to pull this off in the end if we don't overreact.
I mean, it's a little haunting because it all these images start to suggest a narrative in the mind, which is that if the werewolves are out there and they could rise up against us tonight, actually they're going to take their time and be patient and wait for a better striking position. So yeah. It might not happen tonight, but it might be worse in the long run for us humans.
Yeah, and again, this is just an off the cuff interpretation by Joe and I.
Yeah.
But clearly, someone more skilled with the I Ching,
right,
would be applying their own wisdom on top of the existing wisdom in the literary passage.
Right. So there are whole traditions on how to interpret, and there's more text too. I'm just reading the little epigraph bits. Right. There's more text you can consult, and there are traditions of interpretation.
So hopefully at this point we've given you just a basic idea of the I Ching. And certainly feel free to play around with any of these websites to get a little better idea of how this rolling is taking place and what the different trigrams look like, and then reading the passages to get a taste of the literary message for each one.
So one thing I think we should look at if we're considering the potential adaptiveness of non-magical divination systems, or even considering the relative merits of the Book of Changes compared to other divination systems, is to look at divination generally and see where the I Ching fits into the map of human divination methods. And one of the sources who's actually been very useful by coincidence, maybe Jung would say by synchronicity, but certainly by coincidence, on this topic is Julian Jaynes. Not so much for his bicameral mind theory, but just he's got a very succinct and interesting explanation of the different types of divination and how they occur.
Yeah, now I mean, certainly his main interest in it was that, as he saw it, this was a new way of making decisions by returning to the directions of the gods by simple analogy.
But even if you totally ignore the bicameral mind theory, I think he's got a pretty good category system for how divination takes place in human history. And he picked out there are four sorts, right? You've got omens, you've got sortilege, you've got augury, and you've got spontaneous divination.
Now augury is, of course, entailing, say, pulling the intestines out of animals.
Right. That would be one type
of it. One type.
So you can cast judgments on the likelihood of a ranged list of things by, for example, looking at the livers of chickens or something like that. Another category he uses is omens. Omens is the seeking of meaningful information in mundane patterns of events in the world. So a black bird landed on my windowsill. That means death.
Oh, yeah. And we're all familiar with these. We still are ridiculously susceptible to these. A black cat crosses your path. You stepped on a crack. Now your mother's in the hospital.
All omens, yeah. If a fox runs into the public square, the town will be devastated. That's one he cites.
Oh, wow.
So those two you've got. Then you've got sortilege, which is the casting of lots, which is answering questions or receiving guidance by reference to unpredictable outcomes of pseudo-random physical events, you know, throwing dice, throwing sticks, throwing animal bones. generating random numbers to get answers or get some kind of wisdom.
And we'll come back to this one.
Yes. And then, of course, his last category is spontaneous divination, which is going to be the most free and the most direct, which is just receiving insights directly from the gods into the mind of the diviner.
So this would be like a shower thought. Would be spontaneous divination.
Yeah.
If you interpret it.
Or you could compare spontaneous divination to being kind of like omens that haven't been pre-established.
Hmm.
So if like you didn't already know that a black bird means death, you just see a thing and you think it means something.
You see something and you're like, oh, well, that is actually a metaphor for what's going on in our country right now or in my life or
exactly.
with my automobile.
But so the Book of Changes would be an example of sortilege, the casting of lots, right?
Yes. I'm going to read a passage here from The Bicameral Mind by Julian Jaynes because I feel like this just really drives it home. He says of sortilege, quote, "It consisted of throwing marked sticks, stones, bones, or beans upon the ground, or picking one out of a group held in a bowl, or tossing such markers in the lap of a tunic until one fell out. Sometimes it was to answer yes or no, at other times to choose one out of a group of men, plots, or alternatives. But this simplicity, even triviality to us, should not blind us from seeing the profound psychological problem involved, as well as appreciating its remarkable historic importance. We are so used to the huge variety of games of chance, of throwing dice, roulette wheels, etc., all of them vestiges of this ancient practice of divination by lots, that we find it difficult to really appreciate the significance of this practice historically. It is a help here to realize that there was no concept of chance whatever until very recent times. Therefore, the discovery, how odd to think of it as a discovery, of deciding an issue by throwing sticks or beans on the ground was an extremely momentous one for the future of mankind. For because there was no chance, the result had to be caused by the gods whose intentions were being divined."
Isn't that fascinating, the idea that randomness was a discovery in history?
Yeah.
That I mean, we don't know that for sure, but I think that is a reasonable way of interpreting what people generally acted like in history. A lot of times if you go back into history, people don't seem to believe in coincidence very much. They believe that like if something random happened, it happened because the gods made it happen that way.
Yeah.
And thus, for example, if you and your friends draw straws as to who's going to have to, I don't know, do the unwanted task, who's going to have to sweep up after your poker game's over, the person who draws the short straw is not just losing a game of chance. They were chosen by the gods to sweep up. It might be a punishment. And also the outcomes of all your poker hands were chosen by the gods.
Yeah, we have no real agency in any of this.
Now, that draws me to the fact that we mentioned earlier, I think that Carl Jung was interested in the I Ching. And For Carl Jung, I think the I Ching definitely meshed with his idea of the concept of synchronicity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jung believed – he had a lot of essentially magical beliefs, and he believed that there was an a-causal connecting principle in the universe where events could be connected by something other than physical causation, and he called that connecting principle synchronicity. It's kind of hard to explain exactly what he's saying because – for example, you think about someone and then suddenly the phone rings and it's that person.
Yeah.
And so he would say, well, it's not that your thought caused them to call, but he also would not just say, well, it's just pure randomness. It's pure coincidence. He does think that there's some reason that happened. It's just not physical causation. And in that, he saw that principle at work in the I Ching.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, we just to break that down a little bit, I feel like we can often break that down, that supposed synchronicity in our own lives. For instance, you're watching a movie or a TV show with a significant other.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some frame, there's some mention or symbol or emblem that shows up in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And since you both have such a shared history, shared path, shared life, it's liable to trigger the same association in both of your minds at the same time. And then one mentions, hey, do you remember that time we went to the Turkish restaurant? And then you're like, I was just thinking about that Turkish restaurant.
Yeah.
But there's nothing mystical going on. It's just that there are certain things between the two of you that are in attunement.
Yeah, I think that's one good explanation for the feeling of synchronicity. I mean, one thing is just selection bias because mm-hmm. like most of the time synchronicity type events are not happening. And maybe when they do happen by coincidence, you just happen to notice them and they seem very significant. But in fact, they're very uncommon. Another explanation could be maybe if they are more common than would actually be predicted by random chance, there are often hidden causative factors, just like you're talking about. There are things that did cause this correlation of events that you just can't even imagine, but they are pure mundane physical causes. All right, I think we'll take a quick break, and then when we come back, we will discuss some weird and esoteric beliefs about the I Ching, and then maybe try to answer that question of what could the adaptive value of a totally non-predictive, non-magical prediction book be.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back.
All right, so I think maybe it's time to talk about the Wizard of Psychedelics.
Yes. Yeah. Terrence McKenna. because we mentioned earlier that various sorcerers, scientists, et cetera, have taken up the Book of Changes over the years and found new spins to take on its ancient wisdom.
If there is anybody who qualifies as a modern wizard or sorcerer, I think maybe Terrence McKenna would fit that category best.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Terrence McKenna, for anyone who's not familiar, was an American ethnobotanist. Mystic, psychonaut, author, and he lived from 1946 to the year 2000. He was a noted author, a definite counterculture figure. If you look him up on YouTube, for instance, you will find various talks by Terrence McKenna, interviews with Terrence McKenna.
I would say he's worth looking up for his talks because even though most of the time his talks are full of stuff that I think is absolute BS, he's so great to listen to. And even while he's saying stuff that I know is probably not true, it's very inspiring of paths of thought to go down.
Yeah, I mean, he's clearly, you listen to him and there's a brilliance to the man. There's a deep intelligence to Terence McKenna. And yet some of the theories that he threw out there were definite pseudoscience.
Yeah.
Some are a little more grounded, I guess.
Yeah.
I will say we've received a number of suggestions that we cover his stoned ape theory of human evolution.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps we'll come back at some point and do that and even do a deeper treatment of Terence McKenna's life.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't write something off just because he said it. I just mean that, like, as much as I like listening to him most of the time, even though I've enjoyed his talk, it's been full of a lot of magic.
Yeah. For instance, you will find interviews where he's discussing the I Ching. And it's interesting because at times he is very, you know, spot on with his interpretation of the I Ching and what it means and how it matches up with the human experience. And and I'll read a quote from him in just a minute. But other times he is, of course, taking it and using it, wrapping it up in his what he called novelty theory. So he picked up the Book of Changes in the 1970s following an experience on psilocybin or magic mushrooms. And he started looking at the 64 hexagrams from the King Wen sequence of the I Ching.
And this, I think, is often considered like the most traditionally authoritative sequence, right?
Yeah. I'll include an image of this sequence on the landing page for this episode at stufftoblowyourmind.com. But he basically came to believe that the sequence revealed the way time flows through the world, with peaks and valleys lining up with major events in human history. All of it moving towards the end of the time wave, towards the end of time. And guess when he figured that was going to be?
Today?
No, we're
tomorrow?
No, we're way past it now. But it was November 2012.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, I guess that was part of the whole 2012 thing, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's considered one of the major factors there. You know, that along with various interpretations of the Mayan calendar. He even had a computer program that lined up with it, Time Wave Zero.
Yeah, McKenna did claim that in some sense the I Ching, quote, seems to work, that, quote, against all rational expectation, the carrying out of this random ritualistic activity seems then to give a reading applicable to the unique situation. And I would say that hinging on the word seems there, I could probably actually agree with that. I mean, I don't think that it's actually a magic book, that it actually predicts the future, but it does seem to provide some kind of value.
Yeah, like it obviously cannot be used to actually map out the future, but it does line up with our experience of reality and our experience of change and time.
Yeah. Now, he went beyond that actually, though, which is that McKenna thought that the I Ching was not just a product of culture, but was evidence that the ancient Chinese had somehow gotten ahead of even today's physicists in coming up with what he called an objectively predictive theory of time. Obviously, that does not seem very plausible to me, but I'll admit it's an interesting idea. It would be a cool idea to entertain.
Yeah, and when McKenna is talking about it, I mean, he's often talking way above my head about it, and I think the heads of many people who are listening to him. But he was not approaching it from an area of ignorance.
No.
It's a very complicated theory he's rolling out here. It's just ultimately the domain of pseudoscience or mysticism.
Yeah.
But some of his quotes about the I Ching, I think, are pretty spot on. Here's one from a 1988 interview. Quote, "My conclusions looking at the I Ching have been that it is not possible to know the future, for if it were possible to know it, life would be a determinism, and thinking would be divorced from meaning, and we would be out of business. But what is possible to know about the future is levels of novelty which future states will fulfill by the happenstance of unpredictable events. Now, this is a formal way of saying we know where the road goes, but we don't know what the scenery looks like."
I feel like there are two different ways of interpreting that.
Mm-hmm.
One way is to interpret him literally as saying that he thinks the I Ching does in some sense literally predict the future, in which case I think he's wrong. But if he is saying that it contains insights about the way life tends to go, mm-hmm. I think you could say that, that could be true.
Yeah, I think so. I feel as we've sort of demonstrated, you can pull pretty much any of these trigrams out and they will match up with experiences we've had or anxieties we've felt or situations that we've observed in others or read about in the history of civilization. But of course, this may lead many people to ask, well, then does it have any real value beyond just mere literature, beyond mere, ancient wisdom in a book?
Well, yeah. And also, does it have value? We asked this question earlier, I think. Does it have value comparable to other divination systems with mm-hmm. content? Like, is it actually a better or more useful book than, say, consulting your horoscope in the newspaper?
Right.
Or are they all just going to kind of contain vague statements about human life that are often going to feel applicable to you and give you some kind of feeling of knowing how to deal with things?
Yeah. And ultimately, no better than the fortune cookie, which most of the time you just toss it out, but one in 100 or 200 will have some sort of meaning and you'll tuck it away in your wallet.
Yeah. And so I think people of a secular skeptical frame of mind about divination would tend to assume that since there is no actual way to see into the future, all divination systems are equally useless. They're equally perpetuated by people's confirmation bias and general gullibility. It's kind of like you had, you know, if you have several different computer programmers all write programs to randomly predict the final scores of upcoming football games, you wouldn't expect one random score picker program to work any better than any other, right? Mm-hmm. They'd all be equally useless. But just because people can't actually see into the future doesn't mean that different divination methods created by different peoples are of all the same equal worthless value. In a way, I think divination methods, especially the bibliomancy, like we've been talking about the I Ching, as I said, they have content. And that content, even when excerpted at random, can be on average more or less insightful about the present and the future of the wisdom seeker. So while I think McKenna was grossly overstating the case by claiming that the I Ching is an objective scientific theory of time, I think there can be divination systems in which the contents more accurately or less accurately tend to suggest to people valuable insights about their lives and the situations they face. And in a way, I think this is kind of analogous to the idea that there could be like a good palm reader and a bad palm reader, right? In both cases, palm reading is pseudoscience or it's magic. There is no correlation between what your palm looks like and what your future would be, or there's little correlation. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You might be able to like see somebody's rough hands and think you'll probably continue doing a lot of work with your hands.
Yeah.
But there's not going to be much actual correlation there. So the reader has no paranormal access to hidden information, but some palm readers are going to be better at making correct or insightful statements about the person they're reading by using all the standard cold reading tricks. You notice body language, you catch hits and build on them and so forth, or just by being a wiser person and having more thoughtful stuff to say. Now, a book doesn't have any way of like reading the body language of the reader and feeding back off that. But some books are written by wiser people who have more insights about the way life goes. Then again, you might wonder, okay, how could that apply to the I Ching since it has, you know, it tends to trade in these like weird, cool, cryptic kind of statements, right? Mm-hmm. Could those really be all that insightful? I want to mention a personal essay I read in Eon magazine by a fiction writer named Will Buckingham about his personal relationship with the I Ching over the years. And he also, in his own way, kind of like McKenna, claimed that the I Ching works, but not in a magical sense. And I think the most interesting thing he writes in the essay is that he thinks the value of the I Ching lies not in it giving accurate or certain predictions about the future, but in providing what he calls better uncertainties. Hmm. He mentions a 12th century poet and scholar named Yang Wanli who wrote, quote, "The profound implications of the Book of Changes are what plunges people of the world into doubts and makes them think."
Hmm.
And then he writes, "I use the I Ching not as a certainty machine, but as an uncertainty machine, dissolving false certainties. It integrates the fact of unknowing into the fabric of my thinking, opening me up to hitherto unimagined possibilities, scattering the monotony of my either-or dilemmas into a myriad of forking paths." I like that, and I want to think about that.
Well, to go back to your example of consulting the I Ching on your writing project this weekend, I can imagine a situation where one is not even entertaining the idea of doing some revisions, you know?
Yeah.
And then consulting the I Ching seems to suggest that you should do revisions, or, you know, and it makes you contemplate a path that you had already decided to steer away from, and it makes you reconsider your choices.
I think that is a profound insight. I want to think about the idea of introducing randomness into behavior. So most studies show that humans are unable to spontaneously generate randomness. This is often demonstrated if you get some people into a room and say, I want you to create a random list of digits. Can you do it, Robert? Give me a random list of digits.
Oh, what? 1, 3, 6, 9, 2, 2, 3, 8.
Not very good, is it?
Well, I don't know. It fell random as I was belting it out. Well, but I did also, I could sense myself sort of casting about for numbers.
Yeah. Most studies find that the lists people create of these digits are, in mathematical terms, very non-random. The brain has what it interprets as an internal randomness generator. Like if I ask you to say a random word, you'll be able to say a word that feels random to you. But in fact, it might not be so random. It might be actually pretty easy to predict what kind of words you're going to say. And in the case of listing numbers, it is provably very easy to predict what number you're going to say because people have done it with computer models. So I want to look at a study from PLOS-1 in 2012 by Marc-André Schultz et al. What they did in this study was they did this like digit listing thing, and they came up with a computer model using a principle called Levenstein-Damarau distance to look at a list of supposedly random digits generated by a human subject and then predict what the next number in the sequence would be. The model was able to do this at a rate much better than chance. So if the numbers were really random, the model would not have been able to do any better than chance, right? And the percentage chance you would expect would be 11% of the computer model getting the numbers right. But in reality, the mean prediction rate of this program was 27%. This means that the lists of digits people generated were not random. They contained patterns that the human generators were simply not aware of. And it gets worse. The patterns were also person-specific. Not only could this computer model look at a list of random numbers generated by humans and do significantly better than chance predicting what numbers would come next, it could identify patterns unique to each individual subject. So like, if Dale just said 6, you can be pretty sure he's about to say 3. But to extrapolate, isn't a lot of life like this? Like you find yourself with the urge to do something spontaneous, to seek novelty, but what do you actually do almost all the time?
Yeah, you fall back on pre-existing patterns of behavior.
Yeah, exactly. You do what you've done before, even when you think you're being spontaneous. Like this is a horrible example, Robert. I know you've had this experience. I have. Do you ever sit down with somebody and say, let's watch a new movie, let's find something new to watch, and you go through some complicated drawn-out selection process to find a new movie you've never seen before, and you start watching it only to gradually realize, wait a second, didn't we try to watch this same movie a few years ago, and we didn't like it, so we stopped halfway through?
I've had that experience with other people. I tend to remember. It's one of the few things I can count on myself to remember is whether I have seen a film or tried to watch it before. But as far as the long drawn out selection process, certainly there's so many times where you end up just scrolling through Netflix or Hulu until you just sort of time out on it. You give up and you just pull up something that you were already watching and maybe weren't that into, or just something you've seen before.
Right. So this is just about what to watch. And even this shows that we are so much more patterned and predictable even when we're trying to seek spontaneity. Of course, randomness and novelty are so much more important than that. Mm-hmm. They're so much more important than just finding an interesting new movie. Like at the level of technology and science, random enough pseudo-random numbers and processes are necessary for accurate statistical sampling, for computer modeling of complex phenomena, and definitely for cryptography. At the level of biology, randomness is necessary in order for organisms to evolve. The primary driver of evolution is natural selection, picking from among random mutations. If you don't have enough random mutations, if your mutation rate is too low, you can't adapt, you can't evolve, you can't create a diverse biosphere. You could live in a world of fragile, cloned organisms highly vulnerable to extinction. So I wonder if there are analogies to this in the behavior of complex animals. Like, are macroscopic random mutations of behavior important for the quality and success of an individual's life? So anyway, I think this kind of brings us back to the question from earlier of how predictively worthless divination methods could still be adaptive, how they might be useful even though they're not magic. What if divination methods like the I Ching are useful because they introduce an element of randomness into our behavior and motivations that we would not be able or willing to introduce on our own?
Yeah, I mean, they could be the only way to introduce true randomness into your life. Because even, you know, certainly we live within chaotic systems, but even within those chaotic systems, there's a fair amount of dependability.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
we build whole structures for our lives to eliminate unpredictability, right?
Yeah. And also playing with a certain amount of probability.
Yeah.
I have to be prepared for various weather scenarios to take place in the next week, but I'm fairly sure it's not going to snow. We'll see. These sort of considerations come up time and time again.
Yeah.
But if you have a true randomness generator, then you are going to have to think, well, what if it did snow? What's my plan for the snow day next week?
Yeah.
And that can force you to consider possibilities that just would not be there if you did not have something like the I Ching to turn to.
Yeah, exactly. So the way I'm thinking about this is that what if divination methods are essentially a way we've come up with for encouraging mutations in our behavior,
yeah,
in the evolutionary sense, allowing our lives and societies to test new ways of living and potentially culturally evolve.
I can't help but come back to the game of werewolf that we just kind of haphazardly mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
But in the game of werewolf, it is random. It is completely random. Who is going to be the werewolf in a given game, mm-hmm. which individuals will be the villains of that round of play. And that pure randomness is one of the main reasons the game is so engaging.
But it brings out things in people.
Mm-hmm.
Like the randomness can allow you to suddenly have to be the deceiver when you wouldn't normally play that role in life. That's not part of your established patterns of behavior. It draws out things in your personality that you wouldn't have accessed otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, God, and then there's I don't want to talk too much about gambling and all of this, but but imagine like the weirdness of the lottery in considering this. Somebody – we're just going to make somebody a millionaire just randomly and see what happens, see how it affects everybody.
It seems like it often doesn't work out too good.
Well, no, but for other people, for me, I feel like I could handle it. But that's what we all tell each other, right?
I guess that, yeah. But I'm different.
Even playing the lottery, though, is kind of a contemplation of that uncertainty. What
right.
if it happened? I mean, generally, that's the only option that someone is fantasizing about when they play it.
Right.
What if I win? What will that be like?
Now, a counterfactual to this hypothesis that I just put out there, that divination methods might be valuable because they introduce randomness into our lives, is that you could think that, like in nature, most mutations are either have no effect or are harmful.
Right.
But I wonder if there is an overall selection effect on introducing randomness into behavior, because really good deviations from patterns of behavior are beneficial enough to keep the whole thing in the black.
Well, you were bringing up at the very beginning of the episode the idea of pulling up random passages from the Bible.
Yeah.
And we can just apply this to any book that you yourself consider a book of wisdom. It could be any religious or secular work.
Mm-hmm.
So the first five times you do it, you could get nonsense. You could get what would be, on a biological level, just a disastrous mutation.
Mm-hmm.
But then you keep going until you hit the one that is novel, that you hadn't thought about. And I mean, that's what makes the process worthwhile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but that – what you just said also makes me think about how this hypothesis could inform the idea that some divination methods are actually more adaptive than others, even though none of them are actually magic, none of them can actually predict the future. Some of them do feel more useful, and this could be because, for example, spontaneous divination would not allow you to depart from internally established mental patterns, right? If you're just looking at stuff and saying, what does this mean from the gods? You're just drawing on the same types of thought processes that would normally guide your behavior, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You're not really reaching outside yourself for that answer.
Sortilege, on the other hand, may be more useful for this kind of thing because if you're employing sufficiently pseudo-random processes like rolling dice or gyro sticks or flipping coins, then you use those numbers to consult sections of a pre-written text that you can't edit and you didn't create, you are introducing external random factors into your life that you have no control over. Now, there might be, to some extent, an ability to sort of correct for that randomness by your process of interpretation, but I wonder if some of the value of the interpretive traditions about things like the I Ching make it harder for you to ignore the random aspects of these divination outcomes, right? They make it harder for you to rationalize away novelty and make you sort of like face the randomness.
And of course, randomness can be pleasant. It can be terrifying.
Yeah.
Depending on the details of what you're contemplating.
Totally true. Now, one last thing I have to kind of wonder about though, if this is true, if it is true that methods like this work by introducing randomness into your life and that can in many cases have some kind of benefit, do you lose the benefit if you understand that process? Like if you don't actually think that the wisdom provided by the I Ching is some kind of magic thing delivered by the gods, if you think it's, well, this is just a random process that I'm using to introduce some creative novelty into my life, does it still have the same power to do that?
So the idea here being that you would have to buy into the I Ching to a certain amount to get anything out of it.
I mean, and I'm saying I wonder if you would have to.
I feel like the answer to that is going to vary from individual to individual, you know? Mm-hmm. To varying degrees, I feel each individual is able to turn to something like the I Ching and sort of divide it, you know, and understand that, okay, this is not the voice of the divine, but I can find some wisdom in it, you know? Like, to what extent can does the individual value insight in literature or in historical texts?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Or to what extent do they view randomness as a beneficial aspect of life and not just pure chaos to be avoided?
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, I guess some people would get random insights or random charges to action and they would tend to ignore them because they break patterns of behavior. Some mm-hmm. people are just – we're very set in our ways, aren't we?
Yeah, and change is terrifying. but that's the crazy thing is that is what this is all about. I mean, it's the book of changes. It's the book of dealing with the rate of change in our lives in the universe and how one is supposed to react accordingly so as to avoid the more detrimental situations.
It's the book of entropy.
Yeah. All right. So there you have it. Hopefully we gave you a lot to chew on here, along with just a basic understanding of what the I Ching is and how it fits in with other divination practices from around the world. If you'd like to reach out to us and discuss any of this, well, hey, you can find us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram. We're also, of course, at stufftoblowyourmind.com. That is the mothership. That is where you will find all the episodes of the podcast, as well as the links out to those social media accounts.
Thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producers, Alex and Tari, and thanks to our guest producer, Paul, for stepping in today. Paul, you're doing great. If you'd like to get in touch with us about this episode or any other, or if you would like to let us know a topic that you think we should do in the future, or just to say hi, you can always email us at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Thank you.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.